Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now covering in this audio Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 through 15, Cain kills Abel. Now, our context is this. In the first three chapters of Genesis, we have the creation of the world and the curse on the world as mankind sinned and God cursed Adam, Eve, and the serpent and the devil for what they had done. So now we get into human history per se, as we see the original humans branch out with their antediluvian progeny. And the story starts out with Cain and Abel, which is not a happy story. Fitting, because sin has just occurred, and we see the effects of sin in the garden, the first murder. We start with Genesis 4, verses 1 and 2. Adam was intimate with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. She said, "I have had a male child with the Lord's help." Then she also gave birth to his brother Abel. Now Abel became a shepherd of flocks, but Cain worked the ground. Now first we notice that Eve said, "I have had a male child with the Lord's help." Eve was humble enough to realize she needed God's help to keep the human race going, as the NIV Study Bible points out. Even though she was the mother of the living, that's what Eve stands for. Eve means life, Zoe, life. And in a previous verse in chapter 3, Genesis says that Eve is the mother of the living, or the mother of life. She still needed the Lord's help. Now, this male child that she conceived with the Lord's help was Cain. That's who he was, but who did Eve think he was going to be? Now, some translate the verse, "I have gotten a man, the Lord." That would show that Eve thought that she had given birth to the promised seed, the seed which would crush Satan's head in the Proto-Evangelium in Genesis 2:15, where the seed of the woman was going to smash, crush the head of the seed of the serpent, the devil. And so, Eve might be thinking, "Hey, I've got the Messiah. I just gave birth to the Messiah." Well, if she thought that, she was sadly mistaken, because her seed was the evil Cain, not the Messiah. Now, we read about Cain in 1 John 3:12. "Unlike Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother." And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brothers were righteous. So we see Cain is the seed of the devil. Well, what did Eve think? It's hard to say. Adam Clark says, quote, "It is extremely difficult to ascertain the sense in which Eve used these words, which have been as variously translated as understood." So I'm not going to take a stand on that. We're just going to assume that she had Cain with the Lord's help, because we know at least that's true. Whatever she thought, we know that's what happened. Cain was born. Now, Cain means possession or inheritance. Abel was born shortly thereafter. Some even say that Cain and Abel were twins. I don't know. But the interesting thing is, what does Abel mean in the Hebrew? Adam Clark gives some suggestions: weakness, vanity, grief, lamentation. What kind of a name is that to give your kid? Well, some people have speculated for that Eve must have certainly valued Cain over Abel. And if that's so, then the results were not happy. Cain ends up murdering Abel. And that goes to the common sin that parents have of favoring one kid over another. That is something that no parent should ever even think about doing. Well, all that speculation, but that's interesting what Abel's name is. We go to Genesis 4, 3 through 5. "In the course of time, Cain presented some of the land's produce as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also presented an offering, some of the firstborn of his flock and their fat portions. The Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but he did not have regard for Cain and his offering. Cain was furious, and he looked despondent." Now, here we see that Cain was a farmer, if you will. He produced vegetable crops. Abel was a herdsman. He had animals. Now, we're going to assume that God had already instructed the early humans about sacrifice when he created a set of animal skin clothes for Adam and Eve in the previous chapter. It is speculated that some animal had to be killed there, and that's when God taught them about sacrifice. And so Abel was sacrificing as he had been taught. But Cain did not do that. He offered vegetable sacrifices. Now, that has led to a great deal of theological speculation and disagreement. Why was it that Cain's offering was not acceptable? Well, the first and commonly received reason why his offering was not acceptable is because it was a vegetable offering instead of a blood sacrifice. God wants blood sacrifices in order that we have life for life. There's no life in vegetables. Despite what the old earth creationists say, there's no life there. The life is in the blood. There's no blood in vegetables, but there is blood in animals, and that's what God wants. Cain, therefore, ignored that his sin had to be atoned for and didn't offer a blood sacrifice. He could have traded off some crops for an animal and sacrificed an animal if he wanted to. Now, arguing against that interpretation is the fact that Cain was a farmer, and so he offered what he grew, just like Abel offered what he had, livestock. Cain offered what he had was crops. So he never took thought to the idea of blood sacrifice. Well, against that idea is they were probably instructed in blood sacrifices already when those animal skins were made, so Cain probably knew, and he could have traded off some of his crops for animals to offer a blood sacrifice. So that argument doesn't work with me. Some people say that, well, Cain had never been instructed in the idea of blood sacrifice, so how could you expect him to offer an animal? Well, I just finished saying he probably had been instructed by Adam, because Adam and Eve had already been instructed. But let's assume that he hadn't been. Well, even still, there's no need for instruction because blood sacrifice is instinctive. Primitive tribes did it for millennia. No one instructed them on how to do blood sacrifice. So either Cain had been instructed previously, or he should have known it instinctively. He didn't offer a blood sacrifice. Now, that's the standard interpretation. That's the one I take. However, the NIV Study Bible disagrees with that. It says that, no, the reason that Cain's vegetable offering was not acceptable is because it was given with a careless and thoughtless attitude. In other words, it was not the matter of the sacrifice that was wrong. It was the manner of the sacrifice that was wrong. Abel gave a choice, generous offering, whereas Cain was stingy and didn't really want to do it. We read in Hebrews 11:4, by faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was approved as a righteous man because God approved his gifts. And even though he is dead, he still speaks through his faith. Well, there it says God approved his gifts. It didn't say God approved his manner, his attitude. So I'm assuming that it was because it was a blood animal that was sacrificed. John Gill disagrees with me. He says, quote, that Cain was sinful, quote, not because of the matter of it, as some have thought, but because it was not offered in faith and sincerity, but in a formal and hypocritical manner, without any regard to the Messiah and his sacrifice, and without any view to the glory of God. Well, okay, Gill and the NIV Study Bible could be right. I don't think they are. Let's move on in the verse. We notice that Abel presented the firstborn of his flock. Why the firstborn? Because that symbolized the whole rest of the flock. That's sort of a typical symbol. The firstborn, the first fruits, represents everything afterwards. A recognition that all the productivity of the flock was from the Lord, as the NIV Study Bible puts it, and all the flock belonged to God. Now the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but not for Cain, verse 4. Well, how did Cain discern that God had no regard for his offering? Well, John Gill, Adam Clark, and Jameson Fawcett and Brown, all three say that fire came down and consumed Abel's sacrifice, and that's how Cain knew. That was a common way in the Old Testament for God to show approval. For example, in Elijah's contest with the prophets of Baal, you had lightning from heaven, fire from heaven, same thing as lightning. In Abraham's covenant sacrifice, Genesis 15:17, the famous covenant, when the sun had set and it was dark, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch appeared and passed between the divided animals. There's more fire from heaven. It wasn't really lightning in that case, but it was fire. Judges 13:20, this is Gideon's parents, when the flame went up from the altar to the sky, the angel of the Lord went up in its flame. When Manoah and his wife saw this, they fell face down on the ground. Well, there's fire associated with the sacrifice. But as I say, fire could be lightning too. So however it happened, Abel's sacrifice was consumed. Cain's was not, and he wasn't happy. In fact, he was furious, it says in verse 5. John Gill elaborates on that and says, quote, he looked churlish, morose, and sullen, ill-natured, full of malice and revenge. And as if he was studying which way to vent it, he knit his brows and gnashed his teeth, put on a surly countenance, and there might be seen in his face all the signs, not only of grief and disappointment, but of rage and fury. So instead of repenting for his substandard sacrifice, he got angry at his brother Abel. And that just shows, that's so typical of unrighteous people. They often get jealous of the righteous. Look at there, the righteous man, he's prospered because he's submitted his fleshly lust to God, and God has prospered him. And now I've been out here squandering my life, drinking, boozing, wenching, drugging, and now my righteous friend is doing well, and I'm not, and I'm jealous of him. I want to take his money, go vote for a socialist to deprive him of the fruits of his labors. Give it to me. Genesis 4:6-7, then the Lord said to Cain, why are you furious, and why do you look despondent? If you do what is right, won't you be accepted? But if you do If you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. Now, God asking Cain, why are you furious, is obviously a rhetorical question. God is not ignorant, but what he was doing, he was trying to give Cain a gracious way to repent, which Cain did not do. And God says, look, you'll be accepted if you do what's right. You didn't do what's right. You need to offer an animal sacrifice. If you would do, instead of getting angry, if you would just offer an animal sacrifice, you'll be accepted. Now, what does accepted mean? John Gill says it means that Cain would get the privileges and authorities belonging to the firstborn in patriarchal times. That would be the double portion. You'll get what's coming to you if you just do what's right. Repent. But he didn't do it. He just got angry. God continues, but if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at the door. Now, the Hebrew word there for crouching is the same as a Babylonian word, which means a demon crouching at the door of a building to threaten people inside. So sin is right at your door. That's why it says sin is at the door. It's like a demon crouching at the door ready to grab you. So sin, personified here, is getting ready to grab Cain. Its desire is for you. Desire means you really want it. Sin really wanted Cain. Looking for him, licking its chops. Genesis 3:16 says this, he said, that's God, said to the woman Eve, I will intensify your labor pains. You will bear children in anguish. Your desire will be for your husband. You're going to really want him, yet he will rule over you. And that, and as I said earlier, referring, when I was doing Genesis 3:16, I referred here to Genesis 4, 6, and 7 and said, look, this is the same idea, desire for something that's trying to rule over you. Eve was desiring for her husband, and as a result of that desire to control the husband was going to end up controlling Eve. We're reading the Song of Songs, 7:10, I belong to my love, and his desire is for me. Well, that's a different use of desire. That's an extreme longing for. But the point is sin really wants Cain, really wants to control Cain. But you must rule over it. Cain is responsible. He's not a robot. He's supposed to rule over his sin. This is before the Holy Spirit. This is before the church. Now, if it's true that Cain is responsible for his sin and he's got to rule over it, what does that say about Christians who say, well, you know, I can't help it. The devil made me do it. Well, you know, the temptations are just so strong. And all the silly excuses we make, we've got the Holy Spirit to help us resist sin. We need to do it. We don't need to just talk about it. We need to do it. We need to mortify the sin. We need to practice the mortification of sin, as the Puritan theologian John Owen said in a book. I have a friend that read that book 5 times and took 35 pages of notes on it. I haven't read the book yet. Sounds like a good book. But the point is we can beat sin. We can rule over it. If Cain can rule over it, we can rule over it. We go to verse 8, Genesis 4. Cain said to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Now, let's go out in the field is not in the Masoretic text, the standard Hebrew text that's used for most of the translations of the English translations of the Old Testament. But the Samaritan Pentateuch, the Vulgate, the Septuagint, the Syriac manuscripts all have that phrase, let's go out to the field. So we assume the Masoretic text left out the phrase by accident, erroneously. So Cain is saying, let's go out into the field. Now, why did he do that? He probably pretended that he wanted Abel to come look at his crops. Hey, Abel, got a good crop this year. Come out here and take a gander at it with me. And so he probably chose that stratagem because he knew that as Abel walked way away into the fields, he would be far away from witnesses and nobody would see the murder, which is probably true. So Cain kills Abel. Now, why was the first murder so particularly monstrous? The NIV Study Bible lists reasons. First of all, the deliberate deceit. Let's go out into the field. This is, folks, this is premeditated murder. This is first-degree murder. Let's go out into the field. That's pretty bad. Second of all, it was a particular type of murder. It was fratricide. He killed his own brother. And even if he hadn't killed his own brother, he killed a good man because Abel was righteous, Matthew 23:35. So all the righteous blood shed on the earth, Jesus said, will be charged to you from the blood of righteous Abel. So Abel is said to be righteous. Hebrews 11:4, by faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith. So Abel operated in faith. Hebrews goes on to say in verse 4, chapter 11, by faith he was approved as a righteous man because God approved his gifts, and even though he is dead, he still speaks through his faith. So Abel was a man of righteousness, and he was a man of faith who gave God gifts that were approved by God. 1 John 3:12, unlike Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother, and why did he murder him? Because his works were evil, Cain's works were evil, and his brother's, Abel's, were righteous. So Cain killed a good man. Abel was a good man, a righteous man, a faithful man. And he was his own brother. And he did it with deceit and malice aforethought. The fourth reason why it was such a heinous murder was he killed him over something so stupid. Because God took his sacrifice and didn't like his sacrifice, it was easily remedial. All he had to do was get some an animal and sacrifice it to God. Instead, he kills his brother. How stupid. How worthless. So Cain is not a good guy. And God's going to protect him from getting executed later. But I'm telling you, Cain deserved to die. God didn't let him get killed, but Cain deserved to die. We now move to Genesis 4:9. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's guardian?" Or as the King James has it, am I my brother's keeper? Now the where's your brother Abel? That question by God, it was obviously a rhetorical question. Obviously God knew where Abel was. His purpose was to get Cain to confess, as John Gill says. So he's asking, "Where's your brother Abel?" So Cain can say, "Well, I killed him, Lord." But no, Cain didn't do that. He replied, "I don't know." This was a direct lie. Now, one sin, murder, easily leads to the next sin, lying cover-up, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown so correctly point out. Am I my brother's keeper? Well, Cain's question shows callous indifference, and it was also a lie, because actually one normally does to look after his brother. So Cain was his brother's keeper. Should have been, anyway. So Cain was a murderer, he was a liar, and he was indifferent. He was unrepentant toward God for the murder of his brother. And he was unloving, of course, because he killed his brother. Genesis 4:10-12. Then he, God, said, "What have you done? Your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed, alienated from the ground that opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood you have shed. If you work the ground, it will never again give you its yield. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Now, Abel's blood crying out from the ground where he was buried makes Abel kind of a prophet. Luke 11:49-51 says this, "Because of this, the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they will kill and persecute, so that this generation," this is Jesus speaking, by the way, "so that this generation may be held responsible for the blood of all the prophets shed from the foundation of the world, from the blood of Abel." So Jesus calls Abel a prophet because his blood is speaking forth, is crying out, "Vengeance, I was killed unjustly." Hebrews 11:4 says this, "By faith Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith he was approved as a righteous man because God approved his gifts. And even though he is dead, he still speaks through his faith." So his blood, his corpse lying there in the ground, spoke words of prophecy, so to speak, metaphorically at least, spoke out and says, "I was a righteous man killed by an unrighteous man." And as a result, Cain was cursed. God says in verse 11, Genesis 4, "So now you are cursed." So Cain is cursed, and of course the ground has already been cursed in the last chapter. So now Cain's got a double curse. He's an agricultural guy, a farmer, and the ground's cursed. And now he's cursed too. And farming is work that requires you to stay in one place, and yet he's going to be wandering around, a restless wanderer on the earth, God says. So if Cain tries to farm, he's not going to get any produce, so he's going to have to wander from place to place. He might as well be dead, even though God later is going to protect him from avengers that might want to kill him for his crime. He's going to be saved from that, but he's in such a mess now. He can't make a living, he can't grow food, and he has to wander around. Now, this curse of Ham is often confused with the curse of Ham, which we shouldn't do. If you recall, we'll see later in the story of Ham. Ham saw his father Noah drunk. He didn't cover Noah up, but Ham instead went and broadcasted to everybody, "My father's drunk," and so God cursed Ham for that. And so sometimes people confuse the curse of Ham with the curse of Cain. And both of those curses are sometimes associated with the idea of the curse of Ham referring to Africans, the idea that Ham is somehow the ancestor of the Africans, and since Ham had a curse, like Cain had a curse, that the Africans are subject to this double curse of Ham and Cain. Now, here's some erroneous assumptions that go along with that idea. First, that Ham was the ancestor of Africans. Well, modern scholars say he was a Canaanite. Ham was a Canaanite. He was not the ancestor of Africans. That's point number one. And the second thing is that the mark of the curse was black skin. Nowhere in the scriptures does it say that the curse of Cain or the curse of Ham had anything to do with black skin. Now, the origin of that idea may have come from Syriac Christianity. This is in Wikipedia. Some have said in the past that Cain's face was black from sin. Now, that's not black in a racial sense, but just blackened, I guess, metaphorically, because he sinned. But it was not considered that the mark of Cain had anything to do with race. No, the curse of Cain had anything to do with race. However, the idea was used in the American South in the antebellum period and other places to justify slavery, and the idea was floating around all the way up into the 20th century, and I can attest to that because I remember one day this really sweet Christian girl sits there and tells me, well, Dan, doesn't the mark of Cain or the mark of Ham, doesn't that mean that black people are cursed? I couldn't believe she said that. Well, lots of people have believed that. It's an interesting article in Wikipedia about the story. The good news is that even though that many people in the South, well, it's not just the South, the Mormons believed it too, and they were out in the West, but the idea that the mark of Cain or the mark of Ham or the curse of Cain, the curse of Ham was black skin, which cursed people and made them somehow inferior, even though that idea was everywhere. However, in the churches in the South, slaves were allowed to join churches and worship with whites. I remember there was a little country church that was pre-antebellum that was near my home where I grew up in South Carolina, and we were taking on a field trip to see it. And there was a balcony in there where black people, where the slaves would worship with the white people. They were separated, and they had to sit in the balcony, but they did worship in there. Here's a quote that I got from Wikipedia from the Dictionary of Afro-American Slavery by Randall Miller and John David Smith, Connecticut Greenwood Press, page 78. Quote, slaves were accepted for membership in the same manner as whites. After expressing a desire to join a church, one was required to relate his or her religious experience. If the congregation was favorably impressed by one's testimony, the applicant was accepted into the fellowship and was baptized. When black church members moved from one community to another, they were given letters of dismissal, which they might place with another Baptist church. Black church members worshiped in the sanctuary with whites, participated in the service of Holy Communion, and contributed to help support the various programs of the denomination. Still, blacks and females in antebellum Baptist churches held a membership status subordinate to that of white adult males, since that group determined denominational policies and procedures. So, and also in another book I remember reading years ago, that black slaves were subject to church discipline. They were considered moral beings, and if they committed some kind of a sin, they were disciplined just like the white people were. They were not considered to be like animals, you know, that don't have any ability to make moral choices. So even though that theory was around, thank God it was mitigated by, well, it was mitigated because of Christianity itself. It mitigated that unfortunate idea. But it is an idea that I personally have heard it. Not recently. This was 50 years ago I heard it. But still, I heard it, and it's nonsense. It's a stupid idea. And I tell you, when people start using their culture to justify their theology, it leads to nothing but bad, bad, bad stuff. Now, God here says that Cain is going to be a restless wanderer, verse 12. And it's interesting, when we get to verse 16 in our next audio, we'll see that Cain left the garden and went to Nod. And Nod means wandering in the Hebrew there. God, Nod means wandering. So Cain became a wanderer in the land of wandering, as the NIV Study Bible puts it. The Septuagint has an interesting translation of the Hebrew text there. It says, you will be a wanderer. It says, you will be groaning and trembling on the earth. Not just wandering, but groaning and trembling as you wander. I don't know whether that's an accurate translation or not, but it's interesting. Now, verse 10 says that Abel's blood is crying from the ground, crying for vengeance, metaphorically, crying from the ground. Cain probably had buried Abel's body, as John Gill and Adam Clark point out. So his blood was crying out from the ground where he was buried. And he probably buried Abel to keep the crime from being discovered. We go now to Genesis chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. But Cain answered the Lord, my punishment is too great to bear. Since you are banishing me today from the soil, and I must hide myself from your presence and become a restless wanderer on the earth, whoever finds me will kill me. So Cain knows he can't grow any food, he's got to wander, he's got to hide, and somebody's a member of Abel's family which of course is a member of Cain's family, going to find him and kill him, because that's what they did back then. They didn't have courts. They had kinsmen avengers, and the kinsmen would do the dirty deed. Well, it's not a dirty deed, actually. It's a deed of vengeance and justice and execution. All right, so now this is Cain's state here. He starts out with impiety in verse 3 by offering a bad sacrifice. Then he gets angry about it in verse 5 because God didn't accept that sacrifice. Then he gets jealous of his brother Abel in verse 8 because Abel's sacrifice was accepted. Then he deceives Abel, brings him out into the field. Then he murders Abel when he gets him out in the field. And then he lies to God. When God asks, where is Abel? He says, I don't know where he is. And now he's trying to cover his sorry rear end. He's engaged in self-seeking. Help me, help me, help me. Well, you can look at it that way, but I think he's so pitiful now that he's just begging for a crumb from God. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that Cain is sorry for the punishment he's receiving, but not for the crime itself. And I think that's probably true. He never did confess, I'm sorry I sinned before you, God. He just says, hey, my punishment's too bad. Now, one little theological problem here. Who was Cain afraid of that might kill him? Whoever finds me will kill me, he says. Well, who's going to kill him? Well, it couldn't have been anyone outside of his and Adam's family. For one thing, they weren't around yet, I don't think. And besides, why would they have cared? As ChristianAnswers.net points out. Now, let's assume that there's 100 years from Cain's birth to Abel's death. Let's assume Cain and Abel lived about 100 years or so doing their thing. Now, if that's true, there was plenty of time for other children of Adam and Eve to come along who would be interested in knocking off Cain because they're all of the same family. Here's the evidence for that long period of time. Genesis 4, I say long period of time, from the birth of Cain to the death of Abel, about 100 years or so. And Genesis 4:3 says, in the course of time, Cain presented some of the land's produce as an offering to the Lord. And then we read that Eve saw Seth as a replacement for Abel. We know that Seth was born when Adam was 130 years old. So you put those two things together and it makes sense. And if you assume that Cain was born when Adam was about 30 years old or so, then that makes about 100 years from the birth of Cain to the death of Abel. Approximately 100 years. That's plenty of time for relatives to have kids, and they're all in the family of Cain, and they would be upset with Abel being murdered, and they could have taken vengeance on Cain and killed him. So he had a good reason to be worried. How do we know that Adam was 130 years old when Seth was born? Let's read Genesis 4:25. Adam was intimate with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth. For she said, God has given me another child in place of Abel since Cain killed him. So Seth was born after Abel went down. And then we read in Genesis 5:3, Adam was 130 years old when he fathered a son in his likeness according to his image and named him Seth. So we know Abel is gone at Adam's age 130. Again, do the math. If you assume Adam's, with some reasonable assumptions, you assume Adam was about 30. Then Cain killed Abel when Adam was 130. So that's about 100 years later. So that means Cain's been living 100 years before he kills Abel. And of course, we know he lives that long because Genesis 5:3 says that Adam was 130 years old when he fathered Seth. So, and Seth was seen as a replacement for Abel, as Eve said. And so Abel was killed about 100 years after he was born, after right around the time that he and Cain were born is about 100 years. So 100 years for his family to be breeding kinsmen avengers, as I said, and that solves that theological problem. Now in verse 14, Cain says, if you banish me and I have to wander, I must hide myself from your presence. Well, an interesting problem here, a small problem, is how can Cain hide from God's presence? Surely Cain was not so stupid as to think he could do that, as John Gill says. No, he wasn't. But what he meant by God's presence, he didn't mean to hide from God's knowledge. He meant to hide from God's favor and blessing, which I'm sure he knew by now was gone with the wind. Now, let's go back one more time to this question of who might kill Cain for his sin, for his murder. Cain says, whoever finds me will kill me. And I've already said that whoever could be relatives in the family that grew over those 100 years that he was still alive. But other people say that, no, maybe Cain, maybe there weren't any family members that were alive at the time that Cain's talking to God here, but maybe Cain is anticipating the rapid future growth of the race when they come after him later. Or it could be both. But then Ivy Studebaugh points out that option. Cain thinking about the future doesn't really matter. That's not a problem. There's plenty of people around that could kill Cain. We go now to verse 15, Genesis 4. Then the Lord replied to him, "In that case, whoever kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over." And he placed a mark on Cain so that whoever found him would not kill him. So here's the mark on Cain. This is not a curse now. This is a mark to protect Cain so that a kinsman avenger could not kill Cain. Now, the interesting question is why in the world did God let Cain off? If anybody deserved to die, it was Cain. Premeditated, merciless fratricide. Why did God let him loose? Later on, in the times of Noah, God established capital punishment for killing people. Genesis 9:6, whoever sheds man's blood, his blood will be shed by man. For God made man in his image. So why was Cain protected? It looks like that God is contradicting his injunction for capital punishment. All right, well, here's a couple of options that might explain why he did that. First of all, there might not have been enough people around to have people executed at this early stage. Jameson Fawcett and Brown takes this tack. They say by a special act of divine forbearance, the life of Cain was to be spared in the then small state of the human race. Well, here's some problems with that option. The human race might not have been that small, as I just pointed out. It could have been 100 years of multiplying. Second problem is, why would God want to murder around? He's worried about a small population? Well, if he keeps Cain alive, the population might get even smaller. What if Cain decides to murder somebody again? Shrink the human race even more. Well, here's another option to explain why God let Cain off. God had plans for Cain's descendants, many of whom were quite productive. If we look at Genesis 4, 20 through 22, we read this. Adah bore Jabal. He was the father of the nomadic herdsmen. All right, so we got sheep herders that were descendants of Cain. Verse 21. His brother was named Jubal. He was the father of all who plays the lyre and the flute. So we got musicians that were descendants of Cain. Verse 22. Zillah bore Tubal-Cain, who made all kinds of bronze and iron tools. Ah, so we've got metal workers that are sons of Cain. So God might have had a reason to let him off again. You know, when God shows mercy, there's always the problem when God shows mercy. You think, well, there's not enough justice here. It's just like when God does justice on people and we say, oh, maybe there should have been more mercy. We got to remember God can do his punishments the way he wants to do his punishments. And besides, he didn't contradict himself because capital punishment was not instituted till later in Genesis 9:6. In the time of Noah, we're way back in the time of Seth, Cain. So protecting Cain from execution was not a contradiction by God. Now, God says whoever kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over. So Cain got justly executed, and then the executor of Cain will then get executed seven times over, or he'll suffer vengeance seven times over. Now, the problem here is what punishment can be seven times worse than killing Cain, seven times worse than death? Well, here's some options to solve that little problem. First of all, you could say this is a figure of speech. Seven symbolizes perfection, as we know in the Old Testament. So the metaphor could symbolize the perfect certainty of death. You want to kill Cain, kinsman, avenger? Well, you're going to get killed perfectly. That's a symbolic option. Second option, the method of execution would be worse than the way Cain would be killed. In other words, you stone Cain, well, we're going to rip you from limb to limb. We're going to draw and quarter you for four horses. We're going to tie you between two trees and then let the trees spring back and pop you to pieces, that kind of thing. That's my idea. I don't think that's really what was meant here, but it could be. Or it could be that the descendants of Cain's killer would be liable for seven generations following. Well, that makes people liable for something they didn't do. I don't believe in that kind of stuff, so I don't think that's it either. I think the answer here is that this was a figure of speech that your death will be certain, buddy, if you kill Cain. Now, what this mark was that God placed on Cain, nobody knows, and I do not pretend to know. There's one problem here. A physical mark would actually draw people's attention to Cain, not protect him. They say, there's Cain. He was the one that murdered his brother. Well, I don't think that's a problem because people would see the mark and they'd say, yeah, this is Cain the murderer, but they would also think, yeah, and he's marked by God. And God said, and I'm sure this would pass around in this antediluvian society, pass around, you kill Cain, God's going to kill you seven times over. So I don't think that's a problem. The mark is going to protect Cain, not draw attention to him to put him in danger. Now, here's some speculations as to what the mark was. Now, this is fun. Every one of these things are pretty silly, or some of them are, but let me read them to you. It could be leprosy on his face. It could be a wild, ghastly look. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say this, quote, "This sign is thought by the best writers to have been a wild ferocity of aspect that rendered him an object of universal horror and avoidance." A wild, ghastly look, the mark of Cain. How about shaking and trembling in all his limbs? Is that the mark of Cain? How about an earthquake wherever he stepped? That's a good one. The mark of Cain is said by someone to be a sheepdog which used to guard Abel's flock. And that sheepdog was given to Cain. And that was the mark. So when people saw the dog, they would know not to attack Cain. That's a good one. Or maybe Cain was paralyzed. He became a paralytic, and that's the mark of Cain. Some people have said it's one of the letters of the Tetragrammaton, the Yahweh, YHWH. I guess on his forehead, maybe. Well, you can see it. Most of those speculations are downright silly. So we don't know what the mark was. Nobody knows. Here's another speculation as to what the mark was. Cain became invulnerable like Superman. Yeah, right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished with the murder of Abel by Cain. And in our next audio, we're going to discuss chapter 4, verses 16 through 26, and we're going to look at Cain's descendants and the birth of Seth. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.